Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
What do you do when something you love breaks or rips or just gives up the ghost? Our next guest suggests that before you part with it, maybe try to fix it or find someone who can. You could do this for sentimental reasons. Why give up on something you love when maybe a little glue or yarn and some ingenuity could restore your item to working status? You could do it for environmental reasons. Our landfills are full. A recent article in Scientific American pointed out that we have reached a tipping point where human-made artificial stuff now literally outweighs all life on Earth. Why toss another thing in the trash? And then there's the principle of the thing, the right to repair what you own. Across the country, people are pushing back against planned obsolescence, especially when big companies force you to buy something new. It was recently reported that Apple will pay $113 million to settle an investigation after accusations of slowing customers' old iPhones. Last month, a measure was passed in the EU that requires a repairability and durability labeling for certain products focusing on electronics. France will introduce the first repairability scores next month. The new book, Repair Revolution, How Fixers Are Transforming Our Throwaway Culture, shows us why it's good to repair or at least attempt to repair something that's seen better days, how some repair warriors are making it easier to correct a problem, and what you can do to promote fixing rather than chucking something. Joining me now is John Wackman. John is a former public TV producer who started the first repair cafe in New York State. He serves on the board of Sustainable Hudson Valley, and he was featured in my book, Junk. Hi, John.
Hello, Allison. It's so great to be with you.
Nice to talk to you again.
Who would have thought?
Who would have known? And Elizabeth Knight. Yeah. In her previous life, Elizabeth was the tea sommelier for the historic St. Regis Hotel located in our city. She started the first repair cafe in Orange County. She also runs Too Good to Toss, an annual free community swap. Elizabeth, it is nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you.
So, John, while it seems that being a TV producer is far from what you do now, you produced this interfaith, intercultural show called New Morning, which is about the value of all things and embracing messiness in life sometimes.
Yes.
What do you
yes.
see as the connection between that career and the one you have now?
Well, one thing that I was clear to me is that through working in television, as you know, and it's true in radio as well, it's highly collaborative. And so you need to bring a lot of different people together with very diverse talents and backgrounds to work on a single vision. You know, what's the show? What's the program? All of it. And so this is really the same kind of skill set that I was able to bring to organizing. And that is, you know, you've got these guys and gals with so many skills, such a level of talent and generosity, and you're bringing them together in their own town to fix stuff for, you know, as Elizabeth likes to say, people they don't even know.
That's these repair cafes that you folks. I sometimes describe the repair cafe as Antiques Roadshow, except you're not trying to find out how much something is worth.
one of our fixers calls it a cross between Antiques Roadshow and the Island of Lost Toys.
And also the fixing it, and what is it, what's the value of it? It's the emotional value. Sure, you can go get another lamp at a big store, but you can't get the one that belonged to Grandma and sat on her nightstand, and now her 9-year-old granddaughter has brought it in because the switch doesn't work.
Listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. What have you fixed during quarantine? Are you a fix-it person, a tinkerer? If so, if you have one of your fix-it hacks you want to share with our All of It community, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 646-435-7280, or tweet to us at All of It WNYC. How did you learn your fix-it skills? Have they served you well? Or if you're a newbie, what's something you have that needs fixing? Give us a call. Join the conversation, 646-435-7280. So, John, when did throwaway culture start to emerge?
Oh my goodness. Well, I guess you would say, you know, with the Industrial Revolution and you know, the coming on of a, you know, real market-based economy, and where we lost our, you know, where we switched from, you know, everyone being self-reliant to the wage economy, where, you know, everything is a service that you pay someone else to do. It took many decades, you know, for this to really come upon us, but certainly by the 50s, you know, that's where most historians will point to, you know, the real shift post-World War II.
And Elizabeth, I think a lot of people ask this question, it's sort of an obvious one, but why is repairing items difficult to do at this point?
Well, number one, as John was pointing out too, with the, or you were mentioning about the right to repair and the repairability, a lot of the information or tools or software that you need to repair it is deliberately withheld from you by the manufacturer.
Is it an intellectual property issue, John?
That's part of it.
Well,
it's also part of
its sales. One part of the good news here, though, is that our own Federal Trade Commission is solidly on the side of, you know, consumers being able to repair their own stuff. So you have in our book, there's a great scene where the Federal Trade Commission convened a session called Nixing the Fix, more than a year ago, basically looking at these issues. You know, where does the consumer stand in all of this? Federal Trade Commission thinks competition is the best way, you know, to serve all consumers, and so they have taken a particular interest in this.
Let's go to Edmund, who is calling in from Westchester on line one. Edmund, thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. So you asked for people's experience. I have two. One's definitely a victory, and one is a work in progress. So one was a
good.
So one was an old Mac terabyte. It was more than a hard drive. It had some additional networking capacities and whatnot. And it blew out one day, and I knew that instinctively this was a small thing. For 3 cents, replaced the capacitor, and the thing is back up and running, and, you know, haven't had problems, and I've been using it about two years since. So that's one example of a sheer victory. And what made that easy was, you know, a Google search, right? And it was a popular device, and there were engineers who managed to hack and kind of figure it out. And so I was able to copy paste whatever they did. One where I was not able to figure out, which I find very annoying, and I think is apropos to this whole topic, is a kitchen mixer. It's you know, it's a heavy industrial kind of thing. It's pretty expensive, about $300 or something like that. For my life, I've been trying to get this thing to work. I got, you know, a couple of $2, $3 parts here and there. And my ability to be able to fix it has been limited by, you know, searching online and finding out and being able to problem solve stuff. And they do make it really tough. And so I was really kind of quite annoyed by that, because, as I said, I've given two strikes, and, you know, maybe within the next year, I'll give it a third.
My money's on you. My money is on you, Edmund. You sound determined.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in. My guests are John Wegman and Elizabeth Knight. We're talking about their book, Repair Revolution, How Fixers Are Transforming Our Throwaway Culture. John, dive in there. What were you going to say?
Well, one astonishing fact is comes out of the European Union, and it is that 80% of the things that we buy, the environmental impact of 80% of the things that we buy, is determined at the design stage. So, when we talk about repairability, that is what we're really talking about, is making things that are designed to be repaired. And that, you know, loops right back to the right to repair. And Europe is, you know, quite far ahead of us, but Allison, New York State, will be introducing legislation this winter. And it is called the Digital Fair Repair Act. And that is something that we could all get behind.
Let's go to Mark on line two from Jersey City. Mark, what did you fix? Hey,
hello?
Mark. Hi, yeah, Mark, you're on the air. What did you fix?
Okay, so around June and July, in the pandemic. We had a home appliance pandemic, and our built-in microwave in our, we have an oven microwave combination. Our microwave failed, our dryer failed, and our ice maker and our refrigerator failed. And I fixed them all. I mean, the oven replacement was going to be like $4,000. And I said, okay, before we spend that money, I'm going to go look at it and see if I can fix it. Took the microwave apart, went on YouTube, looked through a couple of videos. There was one guy who had the least slick video, but the best diagnostic thing for diagnosing a microwave oven. I went through the diagnostics, determined the parts, ordered the parts. Because it was 20 years old, it took a while to get the parts.
Mm-hmm.
But I put the parts in, microwave works, cost $42.
Well,
that's
done.
An impressive story.
Mm-hmm.
Well done, Mark.
You should post that on Instagram. There's a hashtag #FixAtHome, which is just full of, you know, success stories just like that.
Elizabeth, and also the part about your comment about the less slick video, we had a number of our coaches recommend curated YouTube and other videos to watch about repairing. And one of the coaches said something really smart. He said, you want to make sure you watch at least three on your topic so you don't just get an idiocentric reply. You want to make sure that you've mm-hmm. got the solution is kind of all coming from the same place.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth, I want to ask you about a passage in this book I found really interesting, because there are some people who are thinking, I'm not sure I could do this. I'm not sure I have it in me. And it's about agency. And in this passage, you write, in social science, agency is the ability of individuals to act on their own intentions to make something happen. These actions take place within social, economic, and environmental structures that enable or limit our agency, both as individuals and as groups. This is perhaps the most fundamental way of examining the human condition, and repair and reuse are one small way we can be agents of our own lives. The impulse here is to reclaim something we may feel we've lost. Control of my world has been taken away from me, and I want it back. Cracked smartphones, screens, unresponsive coffee makers, printers that won't print. We'd like to fix them, but when repair is not an option, we end up replacing them instead. We feel trapped by planned obsolescence. Repair culture aims to establish this agency of repair and reuse as social norms, as a way of challenging and remaking the ecology of our economy. So why is mindset so important, Elizabeth, when we think about repairing versus replacing?
Well, it's because it's part of what I would call a resolution to repair. And one of our repair coaches from Jim Rouleau from Massachusetts, as he said, people today don't have the skills to do repairs, but they're not rocket science. I enjoy a better quality of life because of a repair. Part of it is so many people grew up in a generation that they were encouraged to just, when something broke, go buy a new one, as we discussed earlier in your program. So, and it's also how many people are still teaching shop skills at school, in a public school, or what they used to call home economics. We're not growing up with that as a way of life. But I think during the pandemic, as you've had two people call in, that's beginning to change. We're realizing that it's not always that easy to just go out and buy a new thing, and it's also not a sensible thing to do, and it's also something that you can learn, as we say, repair to learn to repair.
Let's go ahead, John.
Well, reestablishing repair as a social norm is really an important part of this. We hear from millennials all the time that, you know, they didn't learn this from their moms or dads or aunts or uncles. So it's kind of skipped a generation. And one of the really, you know, valuable and powerful things about community repair, so these are repair cafes, fix-it clinics, whatever you want to call it, you know, getting people together in a room just, you know, enables them. It's intergenerational. It brings people together. You know, this whole idea of honoring, preserving, and passing on repair know-how is at the core of this.
It's fun. We have the kids take it apart table at many of the repair cafes. One mom brought in a kid who was 4 years old. She said she came downstairs from breakfast one morning, and he had taken apart the vacuum cleaner by himself. And she said, I don't have enough things around for him to to keep his screwdriver off, so she brings him to the take-it-apart table where we have an adult sit there, take off the plugs, and explain to the kids actually what they're looking at and how this works. They don't know that's work. They think it's fun.
Yeah.
Julia's calling in from Greenpoint on line 3, and she owns a lamp biz. Hi, Julia.
Hey. Hey, guys. Yeah, I have a little shop in Greenpoint called Small Home, and it's funny. I'm not a repair shop. I don't repair lamps for other people. Usually I take in antiques and vintage and rework them to resell. But your conversation really just caught me because I've seen such a huge uptick of people coming in the shop, seeing me working on something and be like, oh, could you take a look at this? Could you take a look at that? And these are my neighbors, and I say, yeah, sure, bring it in. And it's so funny because I think people are, like you guys said, staring at all their objects for this year and being like, oh, shoot, I really, the emotional value, like you guys said, about the objects, they haven't thrown them away yet, which is great. And then they see me and they think, oh, maybe this person can help me that's close to home. So, yeah, lamps. I looked at a little music box the other day that really just needed to be taken apart and dusted off. And that was pretty magical. And all of a sudden it started going ding, 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 like again, like all the gears worked. And it was like from the 40s or something. It was very cool. So you're right on that. People are really hopefully looking to see the value in their objects again, besides just going online and getting a new cheap one.
Exactly.
But that, yeah, that's been happening a lot around here. And I'm pretty young, and I'm really interested in this stuff, and I've figured it out. And, yeah, with YouTube, you can really do it, figure it out. And my little son comes in. He's 6, and he already knows my drill press. He knows which sockets to grab, which plugs. So hopefully I'm helping the next generation, too, a little bit.
You are, and I'll tell you, and John will back this up, lamps are the most popular item we see brought in for repair across the entire country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it really is so true. We want to see this come back into the mainstream. Repairing the classroom will be very important. All of these things, this is just the opportunity to have this in your own town. I mean, we wrote this book really just simply to encourage the establishment of, community repair events of any kind, really in every town all across the country. We have a chapter in the book which is called, How Do I Get One of These in My Town? Because that's the question people are always asking.
Well, we'll try to answer it after a quick break. My guests are John Wackman and Elizabeth Knight. We're talking about their book, Repair Revolution. We'll talk more about how you get one of these repair cafes in your neighborhood and take more of your calls. We have a lot of Fix-It folks listening today. This is All of It. This is All of It. My guests are John Wackman and Elizabeth Knight. The name of their book is Repair Revolution, How Fixers Are Transforming Our Throwaway Culture. You folks have been waiting online. Let's get some of the calls in, and we're going to continue our conversation with John and Elizabeth in a moment. Susan on line 5 has a sweater fixing hack for us. Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling All of It.
Oh, thank you. If you have a nice piece of wool sweater or cashmere and the moth have gotten to it, you can take it apart and pull out all the wool and re-knit it into a new sweater.
I love that plan. Thank you for calling in. Let's go to Jonathan on line 1, who's calling from Brooklyn. He's been having computer issues. Hi, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hi. So me and my father, we have a computer repair shop in Brooklyn, and we have learned that the new iPhone 12, if you took two identical phones and you try to swap parts, they won't work. And Apple did that purposely so that you have to go through them. And we feel that's not right.
Thank you for calling in. John, he brings up such an interesting point. This is part of this right to repair movement. There's some sort of legislation for more than half the states in the United States about the right to repair. What do some of these laws want to see changed?
Well, the ability to secure parts that your phone will accept, you know, in this case, if Apple has designed something so that if it doesn't recognize your part, it won't work properly. You know, all of this forces consumers, those of us who own a smartphone, to to go back to the manufacturer. Now, he's a third-party repairer there in Brooklyn. That is an incredibly important thing, to rebuild the repair economy. This is something that those of us, you know, who are working in and around this movement believe in so strongly, that that the repair economy, the ability to take your item and have it repaired locally, is just, you know, that's the whole thing. That's the name of the game.
And as we say, if you can't repair it, you don't really own it.
Is there some sort of
for it, but you don't really own it.
Yeah, I'm sort of interested, though. Is there some sort of compromise for companies that, so, you know, do want to hold on to their intellectual property? Because some of these, I know some of these tractors are like computers now, and the farmers want to be able to fix them, but they can only go to certain places. Have you heard of any sort of meeting in the middle, John, at all?
Well, I would say yes. And yet, for companies to simply block this kind of legislation is ultimately not going to work. As I say, the Federal Trade Commission won't let it go down that road. There are so many cases. I'll just point to one of them, and that is the use of glue and adhesives in electronic products. Because when the batteries, for example, are glued in, you're not able to replace them. That is simply, you know, that's just not acceptable.
Let's go to, we have so many good calls. Jenny in Brooklyn on line 3. Hi, Jenny.
Hey,
thanks for calling,
Allison.
All of it.
Hey, how are you doing? It was so great to be on your show back when you were doing the live show back in February. film Paris is Burning.
Yeah, for fans who don't know, this is Jenny Livingston, who directed Paris is Burning, and apparently she's a filmmaker and a tinkerer.
Well, it turns out, yes, because back during the shutdown, my HP printer that I've had for a while conked. I was about to have my first ever Zoom Seder, and I was trying to print out the Haggadah, and the thing broke, and there was a storm, and it was a crisis, and I just figured it out. I was like, oh, this part isn't going in there. I need to move this and pull this out. I have no skills, right? But I found
feels good.
I thought of my grandparents living through the Depression, and I fixed it and it still works.
Love it. Thank you for calling in, Jenny.
Thank you.
Very gratifying to fix your own stuff.
It is indeed. All right. So for people who are listening and thinking, well, I'm not that good at fixing things, let's explain to them what repair cafes are about. Elizabeth, why don't you start? What is the general thesis behind repair cafes? What happens at a repair cafe?
Okay. First of all, it's called a repair cafe because the founder, Martina Postma, who started the first one in the whole world in 2009 in the Netherlands, wanted people to have a community meeting place where they felt comfortable. And one of the ways that you make people feel comfortable is to provide tea and coffee, which has for centuries been called a social lubricant. It's to get people to sit and chat with each other. So the Repair Cafe is an event, whether it's a pop-up or every other month, where people who know how to fix things, often your neighbors, but not always. Our repair coaches come from 9 different towns. People with skills offer their time and their techniques and their problem-solving skills to the community, who walk through the door and bring the things that they either depend upon or are emotionally connected to. It's an open, easy place where people feel, I've got people who are going to pay attention to me. I've got people who are, it's not a drop-off service, as we say. You sit down opposite the what is called the repair coach, who's going to ask you, well, what's wrong with this? When did it start? And kind of attempt to diagnose the problem with you. And then if you're capable, they will walk you through what you need to do to fix it while they sit there and coach you through it. And if not, then they will attempt to fix it with the tools and resources that they have that day. It's a community meeting place to bring something that's beloved but broken, where people who know how to fix things are going to do it, as a 13-year-old boy says, for they're willing to help you no matter who you are for no other reason than to help you in the best way possible. As John often said when I was starting mine, yeah, you think you're going to keep things out of the landfill, and you will, but as we were discussing, that's not going to solve the problem. The landfills are too big. It gives the right signal. But what really happens is you see community connections being threaded right in front of your face. People who would never, their paths wouldn't cross, they do there, and everybody is richer for the experience. And the other part is it's just fun. There's always something that happens that makes you, it's so hilarious you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah, these are creative, socially vibrant platforms for, you know, just getting a grasp on all of the issues that are that we need to address as, people who live on planet Earth.
What are the basic, John, what are the basic rules of the road when you come to a repair cafe? Because, you know, you can't always repair everything.
Yeah, well, you know, we have a welcome table. Every event of this type will have a welcome table. And so you step up and you say, this is what I've got. And they will ask you to read the house rules. And the house rules are a basic, you know, agreement that you're doing this voluntarily and that we can't guarantee the item that you've brought will get repaired. And what we like to say is that the only thing we can guarantee is that you'll have an interesting time. And then you get paired, as Elizabeth said, you get paired with someone, you're going to sit down across the table with them, and you're going to tell them the story of the item you brought. And that's where every repair brings, with the story. There's a teacher up in Saratoga, New York, who says, I fix things for people so they will tell a story about how somebody fixed it.
We've got lots of folks who have fixed things. We have Norbert fixed his coffee pot and his garage door recently. Danny in Brooklyn fixed cars. Doug on line 7 from Woodridge's been fixing his brother's bike. Let's see who else. We've got a whole bunch of people who are doing great things. I think our final call is going to be, though, Bud in Manhattan on line 5.
Hi.
Hi, Bud.
Hello. Hi. How are you? I just wanted to briefly comment that I don't think the original manufacturers really don't like this idea of repairing things, and I could relate an experience I had with a Hunter ceiling fan company recently. I've had a Hunter ceiling fan for 43 years, worked fine, but obviously after 43 years, the switch breaks. Fine. I call up Hunter, trying to get an information about the part, what the repart would be. Oh, no, we don't know about any of about the parts. We don't sell the parts. They did want to sell me a new fan for $600. They'll give me $100 off. I said, the heck with it. I did the search. It took me 2 weeks. I did find the proper switch. I paid $12 for it, and I fixed the fan, and it's working fine now, and I hope to have it for another 43 years. I think that the American manufacturers really don't cotton to this idea of having people repair some things that break. There's a plan.
No, they don't, but you're taking it back.
But I hope you have that fan for another 40 years. The name of the book is Repair Revolution, How Fixers Are Transforming Our Throwaway Culture. Its authors have been our guests, John Wackman and Elizabeth Knight. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Allison.
The opportunity.
You know about this because you have been to repair cafes, so you can tell the story.
True facts.